Welcome to Let's Talk Socials, the podcast for entrepreneurs who want to stand out on social media and be seen as the experts that they really are. The latest updates and trends from the social media space, presented by me, your social media strategist and coach. Now, let's get started. Let's Talk Socials. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Socials. I just had a look, and this episode is my longest one so far, but please don't leave, stick around. It's going to be a really, really great one because I had Charlotte on from Charlotte Ray Digital, and we talked about all things community building, how we can do that, why it is important, and Charlotte gave us lots of interesting tips here. And then we also talked about crisis management and how we as a brand can react to a crisis and should react to a crisis that happens on our socials or online in general. So without further ado, let's dive into the episode. Hello, hello, and welcome to Let's Talk Socials. Charlotte, I'm really excited to have you on today. We're going to be talking a little bit about community building and a little bit about how we can manage a crisis on social media as well. So I'm very excited about that. But let's maybe start with you telling us who you are, what services you offer in your business, and who you usually work with.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Hannah. I love talking. We were just talking about how much I love talking and you love talking. So I'm excited that we get to talk about stuff together. I'm Charlotte. I am the doer of all things at Charlotte Ray Digital. At the moment, my main services that I'm sort of offering are around community management consulting. And I guess there's sort of different tiers, as you'd know. Like, I have a little bit of social media creation, content creation that I do for some clients. I have a little bit of community management itself that I do for some clients. It just kind of depends on what people need, but I am trying to niche more into the consulting side of things and around crisis comms, which I know you also love, so yeah. But I feel like my business has evolved a lot since where I started, and just over the last 12 months trying to niche down and really offer what I absolutely love and feel super passionate about offering.
Yeah, it's really cool, and I hope we're not gonna make this episode last for 2 hours, so everyone who's listening, don't be afraid. We're trying to rein ourselves in with the talking, even though we both love chatting and we could probably chat for like 3 hours even. So that's always good to know for the listeners. But yeah, I'm really excited to chat about crisis management because I think it's one of the things that business owners don't often realize is an important part of social media as well. But tell me a little bit about where all of this knowledge is coming from and how you came to run your own business.
It's a funny one because I've always, as far back as I can remember, I've always wanted to own and run a business, even though I never knew what that might be. Like, I've never sort of gone, I'm going to own this kind of business. It was always, I want to run my own thing and make my own decisions, and maybe it'll be in marketing, maybe it'll be something else, who knows. I used to really want to start a cake baking business. And I have absolutely made cakes for people in the past, but I realized very quickly that I wanted to keep that as a hobby and not something that I would, you know, get bored of like doing all the time. So I started getting into the world of marketing, I guess you could call it. I don't know. I mean, would you say that like having like a teenage blog is like learning how to be marketing and like community management and writing and all that jazz?
For sure. I mean, I think that's how a lot of social media managers or digital marketers originally started, because it was that kind of the early beginnings of the internet where, you know,
really like, was
where you can get your creative juices flowing and just do something a little bit different. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I was a Tumblr girl. I had my MySpace, you know, I would community manage all of that, all the incoming comments and stuff. I've always just loved talking to people, big communicator, and asking open-ended questions and building, and just the things you can learn just simply from asking the right questions has always just been something that I've I don't know, I just feel like I've always just done it naturally, and like, how could I do that as a job? And I very early in my early 20s and the start of my career, I have had multiple, you know, social media pages that I've managed, whether it's been fan accounts for things, my own stuff, you know, pin-up and vintage styling, and heaps of different social media accounts, just you name it, I've had it. And I started working for a company that was in the tourism industry, and they didn't have any social media presence. And I was like, oh, no, 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 this simply will not do. And I just kind of used my initiative. I was doing another job at the time, but I just kind of used my initiative and was like, I'm not getting paid to do this, but I'm going to start doing it. And the internet was still kind of newish back then. I feel like I'm really calling myself out as being old, but I'm not. Like, it's just, I started doing it and I loved it, and I didn't really have a strategy in place, so I built a strategy, like, just having no idea what to do. And it started from there, really. That's literally where it started, like, me properly doing it, and then later on moving into the marketing team to getting paid to doing it. And it's just kind of built from there, really. I've just kind of grown and gone in these different paths, and here I am now.
I love that, because one of my first accounts that I managed was also in the tourism industry. It was super random because they were an Australian travel company for like young people, like millennials, Gen Z, who kind of want to go to Australia and do the work and travel thing.
Nice.
And I was back then sitting in Belgium and I was like commuting, so I would type these like travel posts and have these amazing videos and pictures of like all these fancy and cool places in Australia while I was sitting on the train commuting to my 9-to-5 job. I was like, oh, come and experience this and that. I was just like, yeah, wish I was there as well. So that's funny.
Oh my gosh, yes. I was just gonna say, I remember doing something similar, but I used to write a lot of travel itineraries for a company that sold motorhomes and motorhome vacations. It was a great job. I absolutely loved it. And I used to write about travel for a living, which was so dreamy, even though I was often so funny sitting in Auckland in like the rain. I'd be like talking about this like amazing motorhome holiday in, you know, the middle of Australia. And I'm just like, this is amazing, and one day I'll get to do it. But I've done all my research. I've been to Australia enough times to know that I could write about this, and yeah, then would later go on to do that road trip, and absolutely loved it. So
that's really cool. And I think that again shows that, you know, you don't necessarily have to be in that particular spot if you can do lots of research and if you have knowledge, and especially also if you know who the target audience is, you can get a lot of stuff out of that and make great content even if you're not physically in the spot.
Absolutely. Yeah, I used to talk to a few friends that I had in Australia, and I was like, is this even correct? And they'd be like, yeah, no, like, you need to change that. And I'm like, okay.
That was from...
So yeah, you don't.
That was the same for me, because when I was working in Belgium, I had been to New Zealand before for like 7 months. So I would see all of these like suggestions for places that other travel companies would mention. And I was like, well, those places weren't really that great, you know, like, would I personally recommend this to a friend or someone who goes to visit New Zealand? I can't think of an example now, but like some places that I was just like, nah, they didn't really live up to the hype.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to use my knowledge and like share the places that I really love to kind of be different to the other competitors. So that worked out really well until COVID happened, and yeah, they completely closed down, and yeah, and then I didn't really have any job anymore, so I decided to go on out on my own and do my own social media marketing business. So that's how that happened.
This feels like a good segue, Hannah, because I was very similar. I, you know, was working in a corporate job, and I was like, the pandemic had hit us, and we were sort of, you know, not even 12 months into it, into the real, just the real thick of it when it first began, and everyone was really scared and stressed and upset, and I was like 10 months in, and I was like, I can go and start my own business right now, I think.
Yeah, I think there's so many people that started their businesses because when I started my Instagram, which was kind of the only thing I had for my business, I had a very, very basic website. But for the rest, I just had my Instagram and I was like, there are so many other businesses right now that are just getting started. So it kind of felt like a wave of new business owners and lots of social media managers that I was in contact with and that just all started together. And it was so nice to have that little community, as you might say, of social media managers who were in that kind of same stage of their business journey. So that was really interesting. And what I find even more interesting now is that a lot of them aren't really around anymore. And that a lot of them aren't necessarily social media managers anymore, but they might be doing something different. So that's always interesting to see as well where other people are right now that kind of started out at the same time with you.
Yeah, that would be super interesting. I can relate in that. I love hearing about other people who started a business during the pandemic because it really goes to show that sometimes that kind of chaotic upheaval of life can just make you go, oh, it just kind of like shakes something inside you and just goes, you know, for me, it was very much a, you know, I love what I'm doing. I loved my job, but I was like, maybe I could love it even more if I was in charge. And that was literally the how it was born. And so I just kind of went off and did it myself. But yeah, I love hearing about other people like yourself that started a job in such a changing, different, little bit chaotic time, because it kind of feels like the very last thing that you'd want to be doing at a time like that. But yeah, I love it. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think for me, the pandemic in general was very much a moment of reflection and a moment of like, let's slow down for a moment, because before that, I finished studying in 2019 in June, July. So I started working in August and then basically worked for not even a year before the pandemic. But even in that like 6 months or so, it was just like work, work, work the whole time. And I had this huge commute every day and it was just super draining on myself and my body as well. So I think I would just went the whole time. It was no moment for reflection or no moment to just come up for air once. And then the pandemic kind of, yeah, was that moment of, let's just calm down for a second. Let's see, where are we right now? Are we actually doing what we enjoy doing, or are we just doing something because we have to, or, you know, just because that's life? You know, you finish university, you gotta go and get a job, and, you know, you might take whatever job you can get in the beginning. And that, I think, was for me a bit the moment where I was like, yeah, I don't really see myself do this job forever. And then at the same time, this social media management thing started. So I just thought, you know, why not? If not now, when then?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. It really was a moment of reflection and just that forced time of having to slow down and, you know, the lockdowns and just people genuinely having more time to think. And you know, I couldn't physically go into my job anymore. I was working from home and sure, I was still very busy, but yeah, the fact that commute, I so relate to that because for me, you know, I was working in the city. That's an hour and a half sometimes in the morning, an hour and a half sometimes home. That's 3 hours of your day that you get back to just think and like exist and do things that you wanted to do. And yeah, it's such a pivotal time in our I guess business history, I guess. Yeah.
And for me as well, like you say, we couldn't physically go into the office anymore. And for us, even like we were completely out of our job. So we were still employed at the company, but we didn't have any work because the company I worked for, we did mystery shops with people all over the world. So they obviously couldn't go into locations anymore. We had a few like online surveys, but then a lot of businesses just put all of their projects on hold. So we literally didn't have any work. So they were like, yeah, you're still going to get paid a certain percentage. I think it was like even 70%. But, you know, you just stay at home and, you know, you don't have to work. So we were literally at home and we were like, what do you do with all of this free time? So I think in the first 2 weeks or so, we were really like, okay, what online courses can we take? Or like, what kind of things have we always said? Oh yeah, we're going to do that someday. Like, I think for us, me and my boyfriend, that was when we started to like look more into investing and like how we can build wealth in the long term. So we were like, okay, maybe you can do an online course on that. And so we were really like, nice, we have all of this free time. How can we fill it again? So that was really interesting because you would think you have this time and you're like, let's just chill for a while. But that was nice for like 3 days. But then we were like, okay, now we have to go and get back into this. And that's when I think I also started thinking about this idea of having my own business and actively relax in that sense and actually do things rather than just laying around.
I'm a big active relaxer as well, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. Like, it's so funny for me. I say I want to go on a holiday so bad, and I'll go on a holiday for 3 days, and then I'm bored, and I need to go back and do stuff. So, yeah, I'm very much like, if I have all this spare time, I will still fill it with things, whether it's upskilling, whether it's deciding that I need a new service and being like, cool, I'm going to suddenly make a new service. Like, I will find time to, like, you know, I will just fill it. I will fill it all.
Yeah, I very, very strongly relate to that as well. But let's talk a little bit about building communities. Mm. You already mentioned before that when you had your first blogs, when you were a little bit of a Tumblr girl, you already back then loved to build up communities and kind of engage with people. Why would you say is it important for brands to, I would say, not just be on social media and just like post, but actually actively build communities around their brands?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's so many layers to it, in my opinion. I think people at the end of the day crave like connection, like, and that's with, you know, people that we love, it's with things that we love, it's, and that could be brands as well, like that could be your favorite clothing that you love wearing, it could be your favorite jewelry, it could be your favorite food, and I think it all kind of feeds through, and I'm not a psychologist, but I feel like it all kind of feeds through that feeling of like building a sense of belonging, even if it's around a brand that sells shoes and you all get to talk about the same types of shoes that you love. Like, it's, that feels good. That's something that people want to be a part of. And like, I honestly think that the nichier it is, the better, because I mean, with things like TikTok, right? Like, there are the most, if you've scrolled TikTok, the nichest things are just huge. And I'm like, wow, like, you know, I wish that there was this amount of love of like a specific brand of like MAC red lipstick that there was 20 years ago so that I could talk with, you know, like, I'm just like, how is the community for this one brand and this one product within this brand so big? But it's advocacy, it's loyalty, it's feeling a sense of belonging. And people, you know, you'll get people that scoff and are like, oh, but it's just a brand. But I'm like, no, like, it's not just a brand, though. It's so much more than that. And the brands that are doing that community piece really well, you just have to go onto their social pages to see the kind of magic that's happening in the comments, you know? And not all of it's going to be good, of course. Even the most perfect brand in the world will still have like scammy robots and things, but yeah, it's building that, it's like that sense of warmth, that tingly feeling, that feeling of like, oh my god, these people get me, you know? It's that kind of thing.
I think that's a very relevant point, because when you mentioned TikTok, I was like, I have found so many niche things on there that I personally enjoyed, but I didn't know other people enjoy too.
Yeah, like, right,
I'm not the only one who enjoys, I don't know, can't think of anything now, but you're just like, ah, there's other people who like this as well. So it's kind of a feeling of, like you say, belonging, and I think a feeling of, yeah, other people are like me. And I think that's a bit of an innate need that us humans have. We want to be part of a group, we want to be heard, and we want others to see the things we like and share those things with others. So I think that's what makes a community important, but even more so if you can connect it to a brand and then use that to grow your revenue, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's it. Like, at the end of the day, I'm a marketer and I love marketing, but I'm I also hate marketing. Like, I love it, but I also hate it, because I'm just like, it's just, there's pros and cons to everything, right? Even if you're in it and that's how you make your money and you're in the industry and you know as much as you can and you're always learning, like, there are parts of it that I'm just like, oh no, like, I need to be more ethical with this. So yeah, like, as you were saying with the niches, like, there's, you know, I love popping bubble wrap. Like, it's just like a weird thing that I really like doing. And you wouldn't think, like, that there's anyone else that likes popping bubble wrap as much as I do. But then you go on TikTok and you're like, I'm not alone. I'm validated. This isn't just me being a weirdo. Like, there's more weirdos. Like, so it's just, it all plays into that kind of like warm, fuzzy feeling of, we want to be unique and we want to kind of stand out sometimes, but we also, at the heart of it, I think, want to feel a sense of belonging, and that can be really fostered through a brand's community.
Yeah, for sure. I'm part of this Facebook group for, you know, there's these dip powders for like nail polish.
Yes.
I'm part of one of their Facebook groups of this one particular brand, and there's like hundreds of posts in there each day of people showing off their nail creations, asking questions, and I'm just like, wow, this was such a smart move of this brand to establish this Facebook group, because not only do they get lots of like testimonials from the people actually talking about the products, they see what questions people have, they can react to any problems. Like, the other day, someone, I don't know, their one of the liquids dried out or something, they were like, you know, we can send you a replacement, and, you know, they can really actively be in that group and talk to their customers. And I was like, wow, this group is really, that was such a smart move of them to actually establish this group.
It's, yeah, absolutely. And like, people that like to say, you know, oh, community's dead and Facebook marketing groups are dead, I'm like, you're in the wrong groups, man. Like, the ones I'm in are popping off.
Yeah, I had an interview with, if you listeners go back a few episodes, where I interviewed Sarah from the Facebook group New Zealand Travel Tips. They have like 70,000 members.
Nice.
And like a quarter of their website traffic comes directly from that Facebook group, because people have this community where they can talk about just traveling in New Zealand and like experiences that they can have in New Zealand. And then they go further and like book accommodation or activities through her blog, and that's how she makes money. So she's literally full-time employed now from this blog that she has started, because she started also this Facebook group where people can feel that sense of belonging and share things that they enjoy with people that are like-minded and that also enjoy New Zealand travel content. So that is a really big part of social media marketing nowadays, building these communities around your brand.
Absolutely. And that's amazing. That is a huge chunk of website traffic purely coming from social media and a community of people. And that's like the most juiciest ROI for her. Like, I hope she keeps track of those numbers.
I'm sure she does. What would you say is the biggest challenge for brands when it comes to building communities? What do brands usually struggle with?
That's a good question. I feel like there's a few things that come to mind, but I think probably like resourcing. I feel like that's probably something that brands tend to struggle with, because it's having the dedication and the consistency there from the get-go to really measure it and see the impact. I feel like so often it's, you know, the office manager or the social media manager that's having to do everything from the content creation to the reporting, to the insights, to the social listening, to the crisis comms, to the replying, to literally everything that encompasses looking after a busy social media account. And that's, I mean, good for some businesses, I guess, depending on where you're at in your growth. But yeah, I think resourcing is probably a big one that I would say. And just having someone dedicated to making sure that the customer experience is there and that it's as high as possible and that they're having those conversations. It's not just a one-worded, cool, thank you for reviewing that product. It's more of a discussion, and it's not annoying. It's relevant and it's fun and it feels natural.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I often find that the idea is there and they know that building a community is important and they might also know how to do it, but it's that like committing to it and sticking to it that is probably the biggest issue that people have, because they don't have the time, especially if you're a solopreneur and you're the main person in your business. You're doing everything.
Yeah.
You are wearing all the hats. So the intention might be there to build this community, whether that is a Facebook group or strictly on your social media pages. It's that like making it work, actually putting in the time. And obviously that's easier if you have a dedicated person that does literally just that. I mean, just, there's lots of things involved in that. But like, if you have one person that can dedicate all of their time to just building that community, but as you say, obviously having the resources to pay for someone, having the time as the business owner to maybe teach someone how to build a community, because yes, you might know the strategies behind it, but still you need to get to know the brand and you need to understand what the brand is all about to actually make it happen as well.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, it could look like, you know, an owner, solopreneur doing, you know, just putting literal a recurring thing in their diary where they do 5 minutes a day, like just 5 minutes, just log into your Instagram and your Facebook, check that everything's answered. If there's anything that looks good in your feed that you want to comment on, do that. Just do it for 5 minutes and that's it, and then log off. And doing that maybe at the same time every day, getting that into that routine, and then sort of seeing what's happening. Is it growing? If not, maybe 10 minutes. Like, it doesn't need to be super unobtainable. It doesn't need to be you having the tab open on your computer distracting you all day. Definitely not. Would not recommend. It could look like that. And then, you know, maybe once you're ready to maybe outsource, if you get to that point, it could just be someone for, you know, a few hours a week. Like, it doesn't need to be this suddenly you need to find money to hire a person to be doing this full time. It can definitely be done in stages, and you can set expectations that maybe you're only doing CM from 9 to 5, whatever that looks like for you. Every business will be different, right? And then you've got the opposite end of the spectrum where you've got these huge brands like, you know, KFC or Burger King, where it'll be CM is, I don't know what their teams look like behind the scenes, but I would imagine it's pretty much daylight hours. And then you'll have people on crisis comms calls and on call and stuff like that. Yeah. Some brands like travel will be 24 hours. You'll have overnight teams working night shifts. So there's so much. It's such a spectrum depending on where your business is at. And I think it's super important to invest in it, but it doesn't need to be unobtainable in the beginning.
I agree with you. It's something that, as your business grows with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the important part here is to acknowledge that it needs to happen.
Yeah.
It's not something that you can think, well, once I've reached this milestone or once I'm making this much money in my business, I'll start being more active on my socials and like commenting and replying to people or replying to messages. That's something that needs to happen from the beginning.
From the get-go.
Because otherwise people will not even start commenting if they feel like you're never replying.
Well, that's it. There's so much competition out there. There is, as much as you want to believe it, like, there are a million other people pretty much doing what you're doing out there in some way, shape or form. And if you're not looking like you're alive on social media, if your tumbleweed accounts look like they haven't been touched or replied to, and if all the comments look like they're spam and nothing's moderated, then I don't know, to me that looks a little bit sus and a little bit dodgy. So I would just be inclined to reach out and maybe get someone else to help me. So it's all about, I guess, just it's so much more than just community management. You're establishing your place in the industry as well, and what you're good at and what you're known for. So there's more to it than just being like, cool, I need to reply to everyone today, you know.
And I think if we think of our social media pages as like our digital storefront of our business, then what you say is super relevant as well, because we don't want it to look messy or like nothing is happening there, because people come to this storefront and they're like, are they open? Like, is there something going on? And if you have lots of comments with people talking about your brand, giving feedback, or saying, even if it's things like, oh, I love this product, or it's amazing, I can't wait to order another one, or I don't know. So I feel like that already makes your business look much more legit, and makes it feel like you're actually there. You're open for business, and please come and buy from me.
Yeah.
Rather than when nothing's happening.
Absolutely. And when you said before that, you know, think of your Instagram or your TikTok or whatever it is, your business page, as like a storefront, it's so true. Because like one thing that I notice a lot of, and clients will ask me, like, do I need to be removing all of the spam comments, like the DM at blah blah blah, you know, just like clearly robots, spam, just rubbish. And I'm like, yes, please delete the comments. Like, it looks really messy, and it's, you're doing your due diligence. You don't want anyone from your community who's maybe unaware potentially to be clicking on that and getting themselves into some trouble. So it's kind of like your storefront. Would you leave a whole bunch of rubbish sitting around your front door for people to jump over before they got into your business? Like, it's not quite the same, but it's kind of just, it's keeping it tidy and kept looking, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a really good comparison with the trash in front of your business. And it just also, if you, I would rather see a post with zero comments than one that has all of these spammy comments, because you immediately make the association, something weird is going on. And then the next thought will be, have they bought followers? And is that why they get all these spammy comments? Or where are they hanging out online that they're attracting all of these comments? Or even what kind of hashtags are they using? So yeah. I think that again reflects back on you as a business. So I would also always recommend to just get rid of the comments and try to see what kind of hashtags you're using.
Yeah.
To understand when you attract more spam comments than maybe with other hashtags. So kind of have a look which ones seem to attract the most spammy comments, if you don't have the time to actually delete them straight away.
Absolutely. That's it, right?
Now, we know it's important to build a community. We've talked a little bit about challenges. Do you have any tips on how we can start building a community and make sure that the community also stays engaged? Because I think that's a really big challenge for business owners as well, to keep people engaged and making them comment on posts, interact with posts, ask questions. How can we do that?
Yeah, it's a big question, but I think my number one thing will always come back to the community come for what you offer. They come for the content that you're putting out there. They're going to comment on something. It's going to stop them in their tracks. They're going to resonate with it. They're going to double tap it. If it's something that made them stop and read or look or watch. So it's really the heart of community management is knowing exactly who your audience is, I think. And I mean, there's so much more to it, but I think know who your audience is. What ticks them off? What gets them really excited? Who are the people that you're talking to and what do they care about? And then create content that fits into those, and then test. So put the content out there, see what happens. Are you getting, you know, is no one seeing it? Maybe adjust the times. Is it too long? Maybe adjust the length of the caption. You know, are you getting very minimal comments, maybe ask a question or pop a poll in or something. Like just it's all about testing. And then once that first step of the creation and knowing who your audience is and then testing, I would say the third one is reply to people. Like, it's called social media to be social. And I think a lot of emphasis can be placed on, you know, pumping out fresh content. You've got to be relevant, make as much content as possible and get it out there. But there's less emphasis on, once you've made the content and you've pressed publish, stay on the platform. Don't go, oh, it's done. Phew, oh my God, I've created those posts. Cool, they're published, done. Stay on the platform. Scroll through your feed. At the end of the day, you've got to have people in your feed that you're following, right? Brands that you're following that you're genuinely going to be interested in. Otherwise, why are they there? And why are you following them? So, it's just a good exercise, I guess, to kind of also go through and I'm not saying like cull, but like if you're seeing things that aren't making you interested, then why are they there in the first place? And I think sometimes we get afraid to like confront that thought.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you, especially when it comes to what you mentioned about the target audience and knowing who you're actually speaking to. Because I often think that business owners have this idea of, okay, well, I'm going to talk about my business. And that's already, to start with, a completely different perspective on the products that you offer and the services that you offer. So think of it from the perspective of your target audience. What do they want to know about it? Why should they be excited about this? And what content can you make around that, maybe? Not necessarily, like, if you sell products, it doesn't necessarily always have to be a photo of your product, but it can be things that are adjacent to your product and that kind of makes your target audience go, wow, this is really nice. I'm going to follow this account because not only do they post this product, but they give me new ideas, for example. I'm thinking of this account that I followed that they sell peanut butter. And the reason why I ordered one was because they showed some recipes of how you can use the product. So it was like, not only do they show me the product that I can also find in a supermarket and I've walked past probably 50 times, but they're also giving me an idea of how I can use it and makes it easier for me to think of what I can make for dinner, for example. So that's what I mean with adjacent content to your product that is not necessarily just like, hey, this is our product, please buy it.
Such a good point. Absolutely. Yeah. Adjacent content, 100%. It's like, what is actually going to be useful to you as a lover of this peanut butter, you know? Like, sure, you can spread it on toast, but like, what else can you do with it that's really fun and exciting? And what is going to make me go, oh my God, I need a jar of that right now so I can make that thing?
Exactly. And I think even if you think of other types of businesses like skincare or something, chances are that someone who is interested in this particular product is also interested in taking care of themselves in general. So what can you talk about as a brand that is not just showing your product, but maybe how you use it, what other products you can use with it, what are other ways to practice self-care, or, I don't know, chances are that they're also interested in, I don't know, journaling, for example. So like, how can you connect all of these interests of your target audience and like bring them into your content? And I think that's why what you said with knowing your target audience is the key to building a community.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you like, at the end of the day, you're so spot on. Like, it's really just creating those interest points based on the one thing that your business might be about. And it's knowing who the people are that you're talking to and what they care about so that you can give them more of it. It doesn't even have to be like a creepy thing that could come into it. It's more like, what do you like? And how can I give you more stuff that's going to be really helpful for you in your life? I don't know. That's the way I try and think about it anyway.
Yeah. And I think that also comes back to what you said before as well with the social part of social media, right? You're wanting to get to know your target audience. And that's really important as well to see what kind of content are they enjoying? And you might sometimes be surprised to see that they enjoy one piece of content more than the other one, where actually you thought it would be the other way around. And when you communicate with your audience, when you reply to comments, when you take the time to start conversations, you also get to know your audience better, and that in turn will make your content better, which then will bring more people, and that's how you get the ball rolling, I would say.
Absolutely. And that's why I like preach. It's like preaching daily to clients to just be like, please ask open-ended questions. Do not be afraid to ask people stuff. Like, you don't have to keep it this kind of like sterile, oh, we're just behind computers type of, or behind phones, you know, kind of relationship. Like, don't be afraid to just ask a question, how a customer might have used their product. Oh my god, you loved the product, that's so amazing, thank you so much for this review, like, do you mind if we send you an email and ask a few more questions, like, I'm just super interested. Like, you don't have to, it can come across as genuine if it's genuine. And you can, the things you can learn, the things I've learned about customers of previous clients are just so beneficial, and those insights and those trends and those interesting ways that people might use your product can really benefit future content. I've seen a brand that do it so well, Etique, based down in Christchurch with their solid bars. The way that some of their customers use their bars and store them and buy them for one, you know, it might be a hair conditioner bar, but they actually use it as a leave-in hair mask for like really curly hair or something. Like, it's just so interesting. And that brand is so standout for me in the way that they take and ask for information really nicely and so genuinely. And you just have to go to their social channels to see that they do such a gold star job of it.
Yeah, they're an amazing brand to follow, and it's always really interesting to see how they interact with the community. And I think that's, again, what we mentioned before, right? You're building a community by asking questions, by talking more about the things that all of these people are interested in. And that's what makes people feel like they are part of a community. Because if they comment something and they say, I really love this shampoo bar, then, or like, I love your shampoo bars in general, you could go and be like, which one is your favorite? You know, it's not an offensive question or something that people have to think about for like ages. They can be like, oh, you know, I love this one in particular. And then you can be like, oh, okay, that's nice to know. And that creates connection between the brand and the customer. And they'll probably remember that interaction much more when you ask a proper question, a genuine question that comes out of genuine interest, than if you just say like, thanks, or, you know, don't even react at all.
Yeah, and that's it, right? It's not, the thing as well is that it's actually not hard. Like, it's not hard. It's just, it can take time. And that's what I can absolutely understand. And just to go back to that point, the whole part and the whole point of community at its like bare minimum, right, is like, it's give and it's take. Like, it's both ways. It's you know, giving something and receiving something. It's sharing your own feedback and learning something from someone else. It's such a two-sided thing. And I think so often brands can just be like, boom, I'm going to shove all of this information down your throat in a post, and then I'm going to go and do something else because for whatever reason, I'll go do something else. And the comments are, the comments that can be generated from something like that, and the conversations that can come from that, are so worth their weight in gold if it's just invested into.
For sure. And I think if we want to talk a bit about crisis management still as well, I think having a community that feels like they're listened to, and that when they do leave a comment or when they send a message to a brand, the feeling that they will receive something back and that there is actually someone behind that account who's invested in making sure that the customers are happy and that they are satisfied with the products and that they have this sense of belonging, then I think that is a really important part of managing a potential crisis as well. And it's something that can make it easier for a brand to get away with something rather negative. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of being super aware of what's going on in the world and how things that are offline can manifest online, which I've absolutely seen before. You know, there's politics, there's global warming, there's, you know, floods, there's all sorts of things that have been happening, and all of that happens offline, right? Like, I mean, majority of it. But it manifests online and you see it all the time, and a crisis can absolutely come from that. So I guess it's just being, it's being really aware of kind of what's going on in the world, what's going on in your industry, what are key things that could potentially crop up. Have that on a list, rearing to go. And if you kind of see things, might be the sentiment, might be sort of starting to steer one way or the other. It's just a conversation, and you just can have a. It can be a two-step plan, it can be a 50-step plan. I've seen them all, but having a little plan there is gonna honestly save you so much panic, because yeah, I've seen a lot, and it's so good having just even a plan that everyone can access to and use when needed, if needed.
That's a really good point. I think when I think of crisis management, and I'm following this lady on TikTok who always dissects all of the PR messages of like celebrities, and she's like, you know, let's have a look at this statement of this person. Like,
Is this the are these apology letters that she dissects?
usually, I mean, the other day I saw one with Joe Jonas and Sophie Turner's divorce, like their
Oh,
statement kind
yes.
of. So she's like, you know, they are saying this, so I think that means that. So what I read into it is like this and that. So I always really like to read these kind of statements as well to kind of see what's going on here. So do you think like if we get like a shitstorm on Instagram, which I think is probably the most likely crisis that we would have on a social media page, what is the first thing that you would do in that situation? And a second question, do we always need to reply to things like that, or is it sometimes smarter if we just stay silent?
So many good questions. Oh my gosh, Hannah. It just, I have so many questions back for you, but also,
Okay, hit me.
okay, so first question, okay, so actually, no, let's start with, if there's a huge crisis that comes out of nowhere, there's always going to be things, first of all, that you can prepare for, and then there's absolutely going to be things that you can't prepare for. But I think the first thing that I would recommend a team or a community manager or a customer service care person, whoever is in charge, because it can honestly look so different depending on where you work, is to take a breath and do not do anything immediately, because I think the quick thing to do would be to quickly reply and to be like, boom, enter, done, and oh, thank goodness it's dealt with now. Unfortunately, and I've done it, oh, have I made some mistakes before? But you live and you learn, don't you? Yeah, I've definitely made the mistake before, because I'm such a problem solver and I have so much empathy and I'm like hypersensitive, so I really want to fix people's problems all the time. It's like something I love. I love doing it. I want to do it quick. I'm a Libra. I want to have everything balanced. Don't like conflict. So I'm just like the perfect person for this job, clearly. But yeah, I would absolutely, if you can see something that's like shit is hitting the fan, take a deep breath, step back, read, kind of observe, take a few moments to really work out what is happening. Because honestly, 90% of the time, it is not even a crisis. Like, it really isn't. Like, there are so many things that people think are a proper crisis that are like, oh my God, this is the worst thing in the world. And it's actually not. No one's going to remember it. So I would also, in that kind of little sort of 15 minutes of really like observing, oh my goodness, something bad is happening, get someone else to come and have a look if you can. Get a second pair of eyes, if it's a friend, if it's a family member, someone that you trust with good judgment, someone who's patient. Have a read of what's happening if they can, if it's not super confidential. because you always need, sometimes in those moments of panic, someone else's eyes, someone else's brain. Mm. It's just so, so helpful. But again, everything looks different depending on your situation. So yeah, I would immediately say, like, do not rush to do anything. And then I forgot what your second question was, sorry.
No, that's a really good point already, because I think that is the key in a crisis communication. You as a business owner are always super invested in your business. There's lots of emotions that play into that.
It's personal. You know,
it is personal. You put so much effort into your business. So if someone attacks it in a way, obviously you're going to have strong feelings about it. So I really like that point of getting someone else to have a look at it. Potentially someone that is a bit more neutral. So, you know, if your partner is also very invested in your business, and maybe don't get them to look at it, but maybe just a friend or someone, or a business coach, or someone that is a little bit more disconnected from the business in an emotional sense. So you can actually have a neutral look onto it and be like, is this actually as bad as I think it is? And kind of like calm down and then think of what you're going to do instead of rushing into it and just, like you say, wanting to try to fix the problem as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
My second question was, is there a case where you would recommend not replying or not issuing a statement where you think it's better if I stay silent in this situation and just not acknowledge the problem?
I'm just trying to think of like a specific example. To be honest, many of the times that there's been an actual crisis, thankfully it's been a brand that I've been working with where it's absolutely adamant that they need to put out a statement. And by a statement, it could be a small social media post alerting that's then pinned to the top, and, you know, hopefully as many people can see this possible. I've also had clients where full, like, lawyers and PR teams have had to be involved, and emails have had to be sent out to people specifically to do with, you know, things like data being seen. So, like, there's all sorts, but I think things that don't really need... I'm trying to think of, like, a specific juicy example that would be interesting, but I'm not sure I've got one. I mean, just anything that's kind of stupid. I don't know what else to, like, just...
Like, or something that is maybe just a speculation or, like, rumors that are going around where you potentially know in a week or two it's going to die down. And if I do react to this rumor or this speculation that is going around about my brand, then I'm actually going to make it worse. Would that be an example?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, like, sorry, I feel like I've just had like a complete brain blank, but yeah, no, you're right. Like, it is really about, and I think if you're a community manager and you're in it and you're in the thick of it, you will absolutely know within 60 seconds what is an actual crisis that's needing, like, oh shit, we need to get onto this now, and what is going to be one of the 90% things that you look at. You have a laugh, you have a little chuckle with yourself, you reply to whatever their name is and, like, maybe a private message, or you just ignore it completely and you go, this is so stupid and ridiculous, this person is no, and we need to just forget about this and move on to other things that matter, because this is not going to be a thing that blows up, no one's going to remember this, it could be a bad review, like, there's so many things that it could fall into. You know how some people write, like, really horrific reviews, and then you go in underneath and you can see the business owner who's been like, hey, that's actually absolutely not what happened, this is what happened, and I'm writing this here because I don't need other people to come in and see that you have just clearly had a tantrum online and not thought about what you've said. Like, there's ways to, like, go back and make sure that you're safe and covered, and sometimes that's just going to be doing absolutely nothing at all because it's just not worth it.
Yeah, I always love to see those kind of reviews where business owners go like, sorry, I couldn't find you in our customer base. Like, it doesn't seem like you're actually one of our customers. And it seems like you just had a really bad day and you wanted to like...
Yeah, you've actually never purchased anything from me. So I'm not sure where this review's come from. Yeah, absolutely. Just put it back on them. It sounds like a them problem, not a me problem, yeah. Hannah.
Exactly, but I think it comes back to, again, then being active and replying to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's no reply, then someone else will see this review and they will go like, oh, this person had a really bad experience. But
that's
if
it.
I can see that either they're not actually a customer or that it is that they what they described is not what happened, then that is then a positive experience for me as a potential customer. So
absolutely,
I think I took enough of your time today. This was super interesting and I think we could probably chat for another hour, but I'll let you go and do some some actual work rather than chatting to me even though I really loved our conversation. So thank you so much for coming and sharing your knowledge and having a chat with me.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been really cool to talk about communities and just social media and marketing in general. I love having convos with like-minded people about this topic because, yeah, I feel like I could just talk for ages.
Me too. That's, like I said in the beginning, one of the reasons why I started this podcast, because I just love to tap into the knowledge of other people and like kind of, just have a chat. I could do this all day. But unfortunately,
we have other things to do. Yeah.
Yeah, we have other things to do, clients to attend to.
Yeah.
So we'll leave it at that. So thanks again for coming.
No worries.